Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So, Ken Holland is making his presence felt with the Edmonton Oilers. There's been some changes. Mm-hmm. Craig McTavish out, apparently of his own volition, heading to Siberia. To be a coach.
This side of it, but in that general direction, yeah.
They'd call us Siberia, too. They're about as close to Siberia as we are to the Yukon, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yaroslavl is where he's going, mm-hmm. which is outside of Moscow. Mm-hmm. And Dwayne Sutter, pro scout of the Edmonton Oilers since 2011, August. Horrible time for transactions with the Oilers, and he's been there for most of them. Mm-hmm. He's out, and they're looking for a new coach, and it's really heating up with basically everyone saying they're getting down to the nitty-gritty of negotiations with Dave Tippett, and there might be some disagreement over how much money he wants. But he looks like he's going to be the head coach. So let's start, Bruce, with the McTavish and Sutter leaving. And as far as I'm concerned, Bruce, the fans of this team, the people who are buying tickets – and I guess the renew date is coming up right away.
Yep.
They were absolutely, utterly, completely demanding change in pro scouting, which is only right, considering the rash of absolutely terrible moves that we've seen. So with Sutter, I mean, McTavish was the GM for some of them, and now my screen's frozen. But when McTavish was under Steve Tambellini hired him, Bruce, they were old teammates on the New York Islanders.
Yes.
Which is seems to be the number one qualification for getting a job is you promise your best friend on the team he'll hire you mm-hmm. if you get a job. And if you get a job, you promise that you'll hire him. Right. And that's how NHL jobs go to people. And it was so in the pre-Shirelli era, when Tambellini and McTavish were GMs, we have a bad move at least on average a year. They traded Tom Gilbert for Nick Schultz. I just think that was a horrible trade. Nick Schultz was never anywhere close to being as good a player mm-hmm. as Tom Gilbert was. Kind of a first pairing guy with the Oilers when he was here, a total workhorse and continued to be a workhorse for a couple of years. And Nick Schultz was just never close, I don't think, to getting that job done at Edmonton. Then we have the signings of Nikitin, Mark Fain, and Benoit Pouliot. And some of those are blamed on the infusion of analytics mindset, Pouliot and Fain in particular. It's hard to know, but we do know Sutter was a scout. And then we come to the Shirelli era, and he became he was still just a scout when the Reinhardt trade was made. The Lucic trade signing was made and the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson trade was made. Right after that, he got promoted and he's resided over. That Lucic, time frame is pretty Reinhardt time frame is pretty catastrophic. But in the last year, we've had the Strome trade for Spooner, Brodziak signing, Reeder signing, Garrison signing, the Manning, Kajula for Manning trade. And the Petrovic signing. We've had Jussi Jokinen sign the year before that as well. So just none of these things really came close to working out.
Well, the issue that I keep seeing is I'm getting an echo. Is players that can't skate. Like one slow veteran after another.
Do you still have that echo, Bruce?
Yes.
How bad is it?
I'm getting myself double. Hope it's gone now.
All right. I'm just going to force quit a few things. Maybe you want to do the same on your computer.
I'm good. It went away.
All right. Go ahead. What was it? What you said there.
One consistent thing about most of these acquisitions is it got guys that can't skate.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Dwayne Sutter as a player. And believe me, I mean, he was all about grit and fortitude and all that all that stuff, but he was never a pretty skater. Now, whether that's his doing in terms of the guys that they got in, but, you know, they got a couple of big guys that can sort of skate, Zach Cassian, but they got other big guys, Patrick Maroon, Lucic, Brandon Manning and Alex Petrovich.
Griba.
Just that those guys are speedsters. They got Griba, they got, you know, Adam Larson for Taylor Hall. I mean, what's that going to do to your team speed? Adam Larson, your team speed is taking a hit over and over again, and the Oilers have become a slow team. And a lot of it is by bringing in, you know, Brodziak near the end of the line and not enough guys with wheels.
And Jokinen was slow.
Oh, was he ever?
Reeder wasn't even very fast. I mean, he was okay. I guess he was an NHL average skater. He's an okay skater, and he hustled, but he couldn't. Yeah, Bruce, I don't know if there's any correlation between like what kind of player you were and what kind of coach you become, because Jacques Lemaire was such a fine, elegant offensive hockey player.
Glenn Sather, I mean.
Glenn Sather was the ultimate kind of slow, gritty grinder, and he became the, you know, the epitome of the fast-moving, elegant, puck-moving game the NHL's ever seen. So, but yeah, it's true. Sutter was that player, and he certainly drafted a lot of players in his image, and maybe he just really loved that kind of
the next Dwayne Sutter, right?
Love that kind of hockey. And Dwayne Sutter was a decent hockey player, very, you know, a good hockey player at the NHL level, but too many guys. Wow. They just like their pro scouting has been utterly abysmal. And they've got to get rid of all of those pro scouts. There's a few more in the department. Like, unless there was something like, you know, where you just kept your mouth, you kept getting overruled for 9 years and the other guys had their sway, but maybe they need to hire more that guy could be fired because he wasn't persuasive enough and persuading the other guys not to trade for Brandon Manning or sign Eric Bélanger or sign Kyle Brodziak, or just a mass change was needed. And you know, McTavish, he's a very cagey guy. And not just cage, I think a sense of doing the right thing. And this is twice, I think, where he resigned his coach and now he's left the organization voluntarily when he just saw it was time to go.
Right.
It's time to hit the road, and good for him moving on. And it was time for him to go. The AHL team, which he was running, had trended up under him. You know, I'm not exactly sure how much he had to do with that. As a GM, he had a pretty mixed record, they need some fresh ideas and fresh blood in there, especially in the scouting area, which I honestly really think is a young man's game. So he's involved in that part of it. Just move along, friend.
Somebody who's in touch.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we've had that. Player after player received from other teams has wound up being a when's the last time we stole a guy? The Oilers stole a guy.
Yeah, like Jason Smith.
And outperformed like Jason Smith. Like, yeah, that's sort of your classic example.
From the Lowe era. Yeah, like, and Kevin Lowe had a number of wins. He stole Chris Pronger. He pulled off a huge deal.
That was
like,
actually the Sather era of Jason Smith, but yeah.
Was Jason Smith brought in under Sather? Mm-hmm. That right?
Yeah, I think it was 99.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Sather just did it repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And part of it is Sather was able to bring in players who could fill a role. Uh-huh. And he had the players at the top end, and then he could just have the guys in. But Right. Anyway, this is all ancient history. But
we need to relive some of that history and start identifying guys on other teams who we can say, if he came in here, we could put him in this job and he'd help the team. And where are those guys?
That's why I'm much more keen about, like, when they bring in a guy like, you give a try to a guy like Colby Cave than Kyle Brodziak. Like, I don't know if Colby Cave's going to work out. I doubt it. Nonetheless, he's the kind of guy that I think are much better odds, because you just got to know he's as hungry as hell. Mm-hmm. He will do anything. If he's got a brain in his head, and I'm sure he does, mm-hmm. he will do anything to stay in the NHL right now. And can you say the same of Kyle Brodziak, who's earning his, you know, 20th million dollars, his 20th million? I mean, that's the difference between the two. And that's a huge difference in players whose skill level isn't that far apart. So why they don't go with more players like Cave in terms of like thinking about who's going to fill those third and fourth line spots, I don't get it.
But he's no burner either, you know, and so it's still more of the same issue of you're getting guys where I just don't think they put enough of a premium on skating.
And that's true too. I mean, they could try to, of course, who's going to give up fast skating guy is not as likely to come on the market, but I agree with you. All right. So Jay Woodcroft, Bruce, he was on what, Oilers Now today?
No, he was on Jason Gregor's show earlier today. And he talked about what a blast he had being a head coach after all these years being assistant. And he didn't completely put to bed the rumor that Todd McLellan wants him back to be his assistant coach. But to me, that would be a career-killing move. And nothing that I heard him say this afternoon left the impression that he wanted to leave head coaching behind after 1 year. Like he said, he was tired, exhausted at the end of the year. But after his first year of head coach, it's like being a rookie, right? Everything is you're not necessarily prepared for the whole regimen. But he had a great year, and he said he had a great year. He said he had a great time this year. He really enjoyed coaching. And I'm not sure what his contract status is, if he's negotiating an extension. Like, he didn't just flat out say, I'll be back 100%, but he was on the borderline of saying he wants to keep on doing what he's doing.
If he has ambition, he would be nuts, of course, to go back to be an assistant coach in the NHL. If he has any hope of being an NHL head coach, if that's what he wants in life, maybe he just wants to be in the NHL, and then he would take that job. But there's just no route, I don't think. It's just assistant coaches, longtime assistants sometimes do get those jobs, but it's you'd have to wonder about him. He had great results. He sounded totally excited and thrilled all year long. I was kind of shocked to hear that it might be an option for him to consider. Maybe just he was bargaining a little bit, you know, throwing that out there to get a better deal out of the Oilers, which would be fine if that's the case. But that's where he belongs in terms of his own development as a coach, as being a head coach. And so far, so good. He did a very good job. So way to go, Jay Woodcroft, and I hope he's back.
Yeah, me too. He did a stellar job. It's the best coaching we've had in the Bakersfield era. Let's put it that way.
Still don't like those power plays, Bruce, where the guys aren't on their off wings. I never will. And that's a Jay Woodcroft specialty. Other than that, I think he did a good job. All right. Tippett. I get the sense, Bruce, that you're not on Team Tippett necessarily at this point. Mm-hmm. You're kind of skeptical about the whole Tippett thing. So why is that? Am I right in this?
I'm fatalistic about the whole thing. And I think they're going the tried and true route. They want to bring in solid veterans that have done it before. And of course, with Ken Holland, they've done that in spades. I'm not sure they need to do that at both positions. But I mean, Dave Tippett is this veteran coach, as you're going to find out there. The side of Joel Quenneville is already signed. But Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun, today are, McKenzie says, just following up on this, my sense is Dave Tippett is not only the leading candidate in Edmonton, but for the moment, the only candidate. Could change quickly if they aren't in the same page in terms of contract, but those matters tend to get solved in Edmonton by throwing a little more money at the problem like that, just like they did with Holland, right? They paid the big bucks for the GM. I don't think they're going to cheap out on the coach. But I'm wondering, how is another 50-something age coach going to connect with what they, you know, the core of the team that's 23, 24 years old? And they've already gone through two of these veteran coaches, you know, that have been around the block and then some, and, you know, 10 plus years of experience in every case, and maybe a fresher coach. But
so, Bruce, when was the last time a coach who had never been a head coach in the NHL won the Stanley Cup? Came to a team and won the Stanley Cup. 2009, I believe.
Pittsburgh, wasn't it?
Yeah, Bielsma.
Mm-hmm. Bielsma.
Bielsma. Every other coach had a long record. Generally speaking, a long record or some record as an NHL coach.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And I think on average, coaches who are more experienced have done better. There was a study, I was reading a blog in Buffalo, did a study. They were looking at these potential Sabres coaches, and the coaches with experience who were hired had a significantly better record. Statistically, like it was like, you know, 50%, not 50%, but 50 percentage percentiles. Is that it? Is that, no, that's not the right thing. Percentage points higher. So, you know, if the inexperienced coach had a league average record when he came in, the experienced coach had a 6-10 record, right, in terms of points. So those kind of things. Now that could just be, there could be a lot of reasons for that. It could be the good teams, that really good teams hire experienced coaches, and that's enough to make a difference. And that might explain it all. So maybe there's not. And you know, the interesting about Tippett is this. So I think a problem has been in recent years, there's not a lot of young players on the Oilers, as we both know.
Right.
And so I think they need a coach who's going to give young players a chance. And he's not be pushing for the Kyle Brodziaks to come in on the fourth line. Don't think that way. You think of the fourth line as auditioning for the third line and eventually the second line, and maybe even the first. That's how it would work. Mm-hmm. And I wanted a coach like that as opposed to what we've had. So I checked Tippett's record in terms of developing players.
Right.
And what I found was in Dallas, he brought in, let's say there's 11 core positions on a hockey team. 6 forwards, 4 D, and a goalie. Every year, he filled one of those spots with a new player successfully. Players like James Neal, Trevor Daley, Matt Niskanen. Just every year, Mike Smith in Dallas, there was a new guy coming in. Jussi Jokinen, Louis Erickson, filling those spots. Mm-hmm. And then when he got to Arizona, it all but ended. Oliver Ekman Larson came in and filled one of those spots. But pretty much, there's not much more. In all those, I think it's 8 years he was in Arizona, 7 or 8 years that a top line player broke in. And what I believe, Bruce, is what I believe with Ken Holland, is that the success of these people seems directly related to how smart the people drafting the players were.
Mm-hmm.
If you have someone brilliant in your draft department feeding you with talent, mm-hmm, then you have success like Dave Tippett had in Dallas. And if you have a crappy draft department for a while, then you got Dave Tippett in Arizona. And it's the same with Ken Holland. Ken Holland was fed from 1989 to 2004 with outstanding players almost every year, and sometimes more than one a year. And then after that, it completely dried up. And it seems like your genius as a hockey executive and your genius as a coach is strongly, strongly correlated to the drafting prowess of your amateur scouts. That's right. I don't know how much there is to this, but like, was Glenn Sather the genius of the Edmonton Oilers, or was Barry Fraser really?
I tend to tip the hat to Sather.
But we all do, right? And Ken Holland and.
But like, Fraser deserves his share of the credit for his three there.
Yeah, what if he takes Paul Sear in the second round instead of Mark Messier? There's more than like it doesn't have to be either or, it can be both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a great combination, things can come together, and I think that can happen as well. But I do think you need that brilliant scouting department,
right?
And I'm going to do a little bit of a study of this. I'm going to go back and look at the 4 or 5 best draft periods for teams in NHL history,
mm-hmm,
and just see. Try to figure out what stage of the majority of the head scout and the majority of the scouts, what stage of their careers were in. Were they young scouts or old scouts?
Yeah.
Does the scout ever get better, or do they just get worse? Because what I think we saw in Detroit and Edmonton was them getting worse with age. So my hypothesis going in, scouting's a young man's game. You need constant turnover in your amateur scouting department. Like a new scout every year, out with the old, like it should be like the horrible rumors about the car sales lot. where the guy at the end of the month who didn't have the most enough sales, he was fired, right? Mm-hmm. Worst salesman was fired. Should be that way with scouting. If you go, but the funny thing is then you look at Detroit's record and they will have two great years, but then they'll have two terrible years where they get nothing. And then they have another great year. So it's kind of, it's perplexing, Bruce.
Getting Nicholas Lidstrom and Sergei Fedorov in the third and fourth rounds, that may even surpass the Oilers getting Glenn Anderson and Mark Messi, Mark Messi and then Glenn Anderson in the third and fourth lines rounds. But they absolutely clubbed it out of the park a few times. And, I mean, ultimately, it's the problem of the Oilers is they just don't have enough of this young talent bubbling up from underneath that's coming in and taking these jobs and filling holes in the team. And I'm not just talking about top six guys and top line players and first round draft choices who get parachuted into the top of the depth chart, but just guys that work their way in that can actually play the game. And, you know, I look at you want to talk about third and fourth round in 2015 draft, the Tampa Bay Lightning with their brilliant GM, Steve Yzerman, and their Julien Brisebois, who's now the GM, John Cooper, that's the coach. But their scouting department was producing these guys like Anthony Cirelli and Matthew Joseph in the third and fourth rounds of the 2015 draft. And now those guys are not only in Tampa Bay and playing and contributing like 13 or 15 goals each on the third line role, they're still on their entry-level contract. They got $728,000 each next year to be contributing players on the team. And then the team's got like a million years of restricted free agency rights over both those guys. And where are those guys on Edmonton? Like maybe next year we're about to finally see one or two. But, Tampa wouldn't be, you wouldn't think it would be an easy team to make. And yet they have these strong, young, underdog players coming up and making the team. And whatever they're doing, that's what Edmonton hasn't been doing. And so we're constantly looking for, well, let's bring in a Kyle Brodziak to fill this 4C hole that we can never fill from within. And, oh, yeah, Anton Lander that we developed for 6 or 7 years. See you in Russia. We haven't got room for you on our fourth line. You can kill penalties and win faceoffs, but anyway.
And then you hear like the guys like, I'm not going to name any names, but then you hear all the hockey, like the hockey writers. Well, he's too slow. Like Ladder's too slow. You don't want to give him. He's too slow.
Yeah. Well, how slow the guys
are you have there right now, you morons? Jesus, how fast you? I'll tell you what. Anton Lander could beat Kyle Brodziak at a skating race. Bruce, it might be close, but I'm putting my money on the younger man. Rack.
Anyway, the Oilers just—they constantly have not been able to identify those. Either by drafting them or by developing them or by just hanging on to them and envisioning where they're going to go on the team. And you hear like San Jose, one of the things I heard about San Jose is that they actually tag a guy and say, he's going to be a good third line left winger for us in 3 years. And that's all he's going to be, but he's going to be fine. And
like that
maybe Jujhar Khera. Maybe, and I mean, the jury's still out on him, but it's not like there's like a zillion guys bubbling in. Almost all the depth players Edmonton brings in, they bring on from other teams, and then the pro scouts have been letting them down. So it's just been a witch's brew of how not to build a hockey team.
Yeah. It's just been... I mean, it's clear that the Tambellini era, when you're looking back, because we have been looking back, like, you know, with these firings you evaluate, like there was the Tambellini era, they just hit rock bottom. And then, although, has it gotten any better? The thing is, so here's the hope, okay? That it actually, in terms of what we're talking about, amateur scouting, it did get better. Now, but Jesse Puljujärvi made it as an NHL player yet, and Kyler Yamamoto has not made it as an NHL player yet, and Evan Bouchard. So there's a lot of now there's all these players, like, so we're all excited about Tyler Benson, Caleb Jones, William Loggison, Joel Pearson, Dmitry Samarukov, Ryan McLeod. There seems to be such an abundance of players who have trended up since their draft years now that that we can actually get our hopes up. This isn't like the Stu McGregor era where maybe 1 year after the draft it looked good and then it never looked good again after that. This is like 3 years after 2015, 4 years after 2015 draft, and 3 years, you know, 3-2-1. And there's 8 to 10 players, I think, in the pipeline who have been trending up since then. It's been a long time, Bruce, since that has happened for the Oilers. So, to see some proof, but it is at least there's that. Okay. Yeah. At least there's that in the Shirelli era that separates it from the other two eras.
Well, the four youngest players on the Oilers roster that finished the season, or even that was on the roster, including the injured guy, Jesse Puljujärvi, 2016 first-round pick. Second youngest guy, Connor McDavid, 2015 first-round pick. Third youngest guy, Leon Draisaitl, 2014 first-round pick. Fourth youngest guy, Darnell Nurse, 2013 first-round pick. Like, all guys taken in the top seven of their draft year. The four youngest guys on the team, there's not one other guy from the second, third, fourth, fifth rounds signed as a free agent somewhere that's a young player that's helped the team. And then you look around, like say at Tampa, and you see young guys like Cirelli and Joseph and others. And there's just no way to equate. And there's no way to cross from here to there without somehow rebuilding and regenerating a flow of young players, not just old rejects and waiver wire pickups and mid-August free agents, but legit young players that might actually improve.
Yeah, so hopefully Ken Holland, you know, he didn't have a lot of success in the draft, although maybe Detroit's kind of like Edmonton. In recent years, they kind of retooled, I think, their amateur scouting department, and they haven't had a lot of breakthroughs yet. But they have those players who have trended up in the last 3 or 4 years.
They got a ton of draft picks, unlike Edmonton. They built their draft pick.
Yeah, they didn't feel the need to trade for Alexander Petrovic, a third round pick at the
Mike Brown.
Idiots.
Okay. Anyway, that's one thing Holland did, and unfortunately it takes years to build that to fruition. I mean, you look at Detroit and you say, well, great, they got 3 second-round picks in 2021 or whatever. And by the time those guys are in the NHL roster, it's maybe 5-6 years from now. And that's even if they're, you know, they're there while they're still on their ELC. So it's not a quick, easy fix. But in that department, Edmonton's still behind.
Yeah, you get 2 or 3 bad years of drafting in a row for a team. And that can wipe you, take you out of the playoffs.
Or you trade all your second, third, and fourth round picks.
Yeah, that's also so. I hope there's a real renewal in the Oilers amateur scouting department as well right now. And they bring in a lot of, I don't know where they find these scouts, the good young ones, but find them. That's the job. Go find them and bring in a new one every year. Keep it flowing. You know, maybe after you've been an amateur scout for 3 or 4 years, you get moved up to be a pro scout, and that would work out. You can be an NHL rink, then it's a little less arduous. It's a little less horrible lifestyle probably. And so you can keep scouting acumen without whatever it is, that X factor that these amateur scouts have, these exceptional amateur scouts who have gone on these incredible runs, whatever that is. And I don't know what it is. And if they knew what it is, they would have done it over a longer period of time. So I don't even know if they knew what. I don't know if you could, if Barry Fraser or the Swedish scout for the scouts for Detroit, if they knew what it was, they would have still done it from 2004 to 2015 rather than get a series of not such great players out of Sweden. So, but anyway, hopefully they can find some scouts with that X factor.
Yeah, well, they've got work to be done. As we've sort of emphasized throughout the year, I mean, This past year was an important step in the right direction in that they've actually now primed the pump down at the Oklahoma City level where they've got some players who are close. So hopefully as early as next year, we'll see a couple of those guys coming in.
You need one of those players every single year. A functional team will have one player every single year making it in those core 11 positions. So top goalie, top 4D, or top six forwards. You need one player every single year. And I think the Oilers have that player this year. I think it's Caleb Jones. I think he's going to be a top 4D man in the NHL. You don't have to, like, I'm not saying in their first year in the NHL they have to be that, but they have
don't necessarily jump from one to the other. And that's been the other thing that the Oilers have
but we can easily see the next 5 years that they might get that, right? You know, it could be you get Jones or Sam Marukov, or you get Joel Pearson or Evan Bouchard, or you get Tyler Benson, Cooper Marody, or Ryan McLeod, or Jesse Puljujärvi or Kyler Yamamoto. There's multiple possibilities at each position with players who have some promise. So, but this is what they everyone's on their, like, who are we going to sign this summer? Like, which UFA might, like, are we really going to go down that wasting money on?
I don't think there's any
27
waste, is there?
There isn't, and you shouldn't, because if you do, then when these guys do develop, you can't keep them. This was the problem with the Chicago model, was they overspent. And when they had all these great players, but they couldn't keep them because they had, and maybe it got them extra cups. I don't know, but maybe it cost them cups too, if they could have kept that young core together a little bit better. But anyway, that's the model for Edmonton. They don't have a lot of choice. They don't have a lot of money is these young players. And it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there.
Yeah.
David. Any other thoughts?
Well, other than today seems like a day off after yesterday. I watched 6 different games yesterday. 4 from the World. Not, I didn't watch every period, every game, but I tracked 6 different games while they were happening. 4 from the World Championships, plus the Memorial Cup game with Samorkov in it, and then the Stanley Cup, which is now set. So today, we're down to... it's kind of an off day everywhere.
So, Bruce, I haven't watched any series, but could you tell me, don't the Oilers have this kind of lazy forward who can't lead his own, drive his own line?
Yeah, that guy.
How's he been doing in the World Championships?
Well, it's kind of been interesting to watch, you know, because Leon Draisaitl, that guy, has not only been forced to drive his own line, and in a very serious way, he's been driving his own team. And it really puts him on a whole different level where he is the man. It's not, he's anybody's sidekick, not a chance. He's the best German hockey player ever, as far as I'm concerned. And not since the years of Erich Kühnhackl have the Germans ever relied so heavily on one guy to drive their scoring. And he has come through 5 goals, 3 assists. He had 2 killer game-winning goals in wins, huge wins against Slovakia and Finland. And Germany, for all that they're sort of a second to third tier hockey power, cruise through Group A with a 5-2 record and a matchup against the Czech Republic, which at least they have a fighting chance in the quarterfinals.
Erich Kühnhackl.
Mm-hmm.
Erich Kühnhackl.
Mm-hmm.
He played for Landshut EV.
Mm-hmm. Scored a million goals, eh?
It looks like he was a West German, eh?
Yes. Yeah, back when they split, they had the two countries.
So 1 year in Landshut, he played 48 games. He had 83 goals and 155 points. Now, by the last year, I don't know how old he was. And they didn't keep stats, I don't think, for a lot of the time he was playing. It's interesting. He never tried the NHL, eh?
No, I don't think so.
He never did.
His son did, Tom, has played with Pittsburgh Penguins. And
too bad that he didn't.
Yeah, it would have been fun. He was a huge man, and he was a sort of a Phil Esposito type. He'd just fill the net from the slot. But yeah, he was the last time Germany had like one real feature player. And he is Yeah, 6'5", 214 pounds. And back in the day, that was bigger than 6'5 is today. Like, and they just couldn't handle him physically. And yeah, like you say, 83 goals 1 year, 59, 52. You know, he was just a goal-scoring machine. And Leon, on the other hand, he's a goal-scoring machine, but he's also a playmaking machine.
Yeah.
And he's delivered some mighty sweet passes in the games that I've watched. And, of course, it's going through his stick a lot.
Here's his complete stats. Holy moly. So he played from 1968 to 1989 from the German league. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for talking.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.